Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on. It never dies. It is immortal. I am Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me is my good mate, Robert Henry Barron, who you can find at MosoJudge on Twitter. And we are here to review the Trent Bridge Test. Of course, England lost that test match, which happened to be Ben Stokes' final outing in international cricket. They lost it by 160 runs and ended up losing the series, which they were leading 1-0. And yeah, they've lost the series 2-1 on home soil. Bazball started with a series win against New Zealand, and it has officially ended with a series loss to New Zealand on home soil. So, Rob, how do you feel about all of these things?
Well, they finally did it to themselves. I actually feel sorry for New Zealand for winning that test series, because all they had to do was kind of show up and play cricket is what the... What people are going to remember is that England just pissed that away again. Whereas actually, New Zealand plays some very smart, very rugged, proper test match cricket and weren't afraid to do the hard work. Now, England, in the face of having to do some hard work to get anything out of that test and therefore the series, went totally the other way and made a mockery of not just this game, but of the format in general. And I think Stokes did quite a lot to revive interest in Test cricket at a pretty dangerous time for it when he came in. And he went out, mainly for narrative reasons, I'm sure, not just sticking two fingers up at the establishment, at setting fire to Test cricket and merrily running around with a can of petrol, pouring more and more onto the flames. It was a disgrace. Let's take his bit out of it, right? Him taking the piss out of Test match cricket as he went was an act of... some would say defiance, some would say petulance, whatever you want to call it, fine. But he had an effect on the others. And to have an effect on the others in such a way is really bad, right? Because not only did Harry Brook play one of them, Michael Vaughan called it disgraceful. And I agree with him. That is the right word for the innings. At a time where England didn't need... Also, he came out and said, and McCullum also backed him up and said the same thing, that there was always a plan for Stokes to open in the second innings, and it was very well thought out, and it was a tactic to get ahead of the game while the ball was hard, right? Bollocks. Because Emilio Gay certainly didn't know about this plan that had been planned way in advance, and he is somebody that you would tell if you were planning on Stokes opening the batting. They didn't tell him, because when New Zealand declared, they declared and won by loads of runs, when New Zealand declared, Emilio Gay was running off to go and put his pads on to open the batting. If you are number six, you do not sprint as fast as you can to get changed. You don't need to. You can go and have a shower. You can do whatever you want. Ben Stokes then ran the fastest he's ran in England whites for several years, overtook Emilio Gay and said, listen, mate, I know it's your third test match and you have a career that you're trying to make by opening the batting. And it would be a great start to your career to be tested in test cricket by trying to help us win a series by batting out the rest of the day and seeing where we are tomorrow. But sorry, it's the Ben Stokes show. I'm Ben Stokes. I'm in charge of the Ben Stokes show. I don't care where you bat. The only thing that matters to everybody in here, and most importantly to me, is that I open the batting. So I'm going to do that right now. See you later. So he runs off, puts his pads on, comes out and plays a disgusting test match. Innings should have been out for one. Was basically just, I am going to hit every ball for six and I don't care. So when he's out, the rest of the team could have gone, okay, well, he's done his thing. To be fair, Stokes scoring 30 is more than you would expect at the moment as far as his batting's going. So if he's got 30 off 20 at the start, great. See you later, Ben. Thanks very much. Go and say whatever you need to. Go away. But Bethel comes out and plays no shot. Why he's number three? Okay, fine. Where's Joe Root in all of this? No, doesn't exist. Okay. And then Harry Brook comes out and plays a disgusting mockery of an innings where he hits his first ball for six over backwards square. His next ball is one of those scoops where he's lying on the floor that he's very good at playing for four. And you think, what am I watching here? Like, this all ends in tears quite quickly. And then he gets out caught fine leg. And literally, Behram, the New Zealand players are picked up on the stump mics, laughing their heads off, going, what are they doing? And they're basically saying, we are being handed a test series here. We just have to turn up and bowl. Bearing in mind, it's not quite New Zealand's strongest team. They lost one bowler to concussion, who was replaced by someone who did a very good job. And they'd also lost Sears, who went out and retired hurt, came back in to help his mate get 100, blah, blah, blah. So he's hurt. Then Stokes knocks O'Rourke's finger off immediately. When he's on one run, smashes it straight back at him, drops it, cuts his finger, he's off the field. They're running out of actual cricketers to play. And England had a chance of winning a Test match series that at no point did they take seriously. Now, at least they didn't charge anyone to go into the ground for that fiasco of a day five. But it is an appalling middle finger to cricket, throw a whole Test series away just because the captain spat his dummy out that he got in a bit of trouble for doing something stupid again.
Well, Stokesy used to celebrate with the middle finger down. I think he just reversed that celebration in his final Test match. You probably have to fix your mic a bit as well, Rob. And you spoke about New Zealand losing players in the Test match. Even in this third Test, or before the start of this third Test match, they had lost some players to injury. Glenn Phillips was the hero of the second Test match at the Oval, gone, injured. Kyle Jameson had done really well in the series, didn't feature in the last Test. Matt Henry took 11 wickets at the Oval and he wasn't available either. So they brought Mitch Santner in and Blair Tickner, who gets concussed in the Test match and is replaced by Zachary Foakes. And then Ben Sears also came in, who also got injured. So New Zealand's players were dropping like flies to injury, and England still couldn't make use of that. And they, mind you, England, they had a decent team in this Test match because Stokesy and Atkinson were back after their one-match suspension. Jamie Smith was back after the birth of his child. And Bash was also back, who was apparently England's lucky charm. So they cannot complain as far as the team is concerned, because I think on paper, England were stronger and at home, mind you. And I suppose it was a really good toss to win for New Zealand and Tom Latham. Tom Latham, of course, now winning away Test series in India and England. So his captaincy stocks have risen. But yes, obviously at Trent Bridge, where we were expecting a flatty, we got a flatty. It was flat for the major chunks of this game, this entire Test. But towards the end, we could see some, you know, inconsistent bounce that became a bit of a feature.
Yeah.
But yeah, good toss to win for New Zealand and Latham. But this should have been England's Test.
Yeah, well, lots of Tests should be England's Test that they don't win. And it's infuriating. They won a lottery Test at Lord's with a pitch which has been deemed unfit for cricket. And when you're 1-0 up with two to play in a series at home against New Zealand, as much as I love New Zealand and rated them quite highly before the series, with the players that you mentioned dropping out, England should not then be losing that Test match series. They buggered about at the second Test because, you know, three of four... Let's not forget Ollie Robinson here, by the way. Ollie Robinson was man of the match in his first Test back for ages. Then he wasn't ready to play in the second one. He was ready to play in the third, and they basically said it's too hot for him to play in this because it's going to be a Test match and it's going to be warm. Basically, it's nice weather, so the guy that got man of the match in the first one when the series is on the line isn't allowed to play. Let's not forget that from the idiots that made these teams.
Ollie Robinson did not spend a chunk of his life in the south of Spain like you did, Rob Barron.
Yeah, but I'm not a professional cricketer, right? It was a nice sunny day. If you're a fast bowler, you should be able to bowl. I think he was fine to play, and they just decide they come up with this bollocks about airspeed and all these buzzwords that they like, where they don't actually put the best team on the park to win cricket matches. So the second Test they threw away because they put a disgrace, an absolutely awful cricket team out with loads of Davidsons, people playing in the wrong positions, bowlers not knowing what they were meant to be doing, all a fiasco, right? So they lost that one. Then they get the band back together for the third Test because the naughty boys have been allowed back in again, and they bugger about constantly for the whole Test match. So yes, New Zealand had the best of it, and let's not forget New Zealand were 300 for zero, 300 for none at one point in this Test match.
Well, they actually put up, Latham and Conway, they put up an opening stand of 317 runs in the first innings, and New Zealand were rolled over for 438. So after the first wicket fell, New Zealand lasted for what, 121 runs more? I mean, it is crazy how they also kept throwing their wickets away, but that 317 run partnership up top, that ultimately proved to be very, very crucial because England just... They were always playing catch-up, weren't they?
Yeah, and England, you know, did what they often do and dropped some catches, and they, you know, slip went out and the ball went straight to where slip was, and the missed run-outs, and Conway was plum LBW and they didn't bother reviewing it to Bashir, wasn't he, when he was on about 70. So they had their chances and they missed them again. But 438 was an absolute result from 317 for none. And then England come to bat and... At one point, we're doing really well, 185 for one. And you think, okay, they're knuckling down. We've got some Test match. Again, really lucky. Ben Duckett was dropped, complete dolly. Who was that dropped him when he was on eight?
So
He's only on 8.
I actually want to cross-check my drops and missed chances ledger with yours because I know that yours will be a lot more thorough. I didn't catch a lot of this test match as well, right? I had daddy duties one day and then one day I was driving a lot. So you could say that I've watched like 60% of this particular test. I obviously noted down that it was a flatty in Nottingham. And I think that, you know, the batting conditions were fairly straightforward throughout. But of course, towards the end, I think there was some inconsistent bounce. But here's my ledger for missed chances and drop catches. And then you can add to it whenever you feel like I've missed something.
Sure.
So Tom Latham, who scored his 17th test ton in this test match, 151 of 214. So quite brisk by him as well. And he's someone who, by the way, Latham always gets this flack that even though he scored the most test hundreds for an opening batter in the format since the start of 2016, he hasn't done well versus the great sides or the big sides, supposed big sides. So yeah, this was finally one of those check boxes ticked. But yeah, he was dropped on 129 by Jamie Smith. Had already made his 100, but that was a pretty easy chance behind the stumps, down the leg side. And then Devon Conway, as you mentioned, he was out LBW versus Bash on 71. England never reviewed it. He offered a half chance to Ben Duckett as well, which a taller person would have caught. Now, Conway was on 130 then, and he ends up making 157 of 224. Those trigger movements finally came off because he was having a terrible series, and those two did really well. In the same innings, Will O'Rourke was dropped on 19 by Jamie Smith, and Tom Blundell was dropped on 28 by Bash. Now, they didn't do much damage, but the first 2 to 3 missed opportunities, that dearly costed England. And coming to the second innings, I think New Zealand kind of outdropped England. I mean, if we look at the series, Rob Barron, if I had 10 pence for every dropped catch, would I still have enough pounds to buy a pint at Lord's?
No, not for £9.30, you wouldn't, Barron. No. No, you wouldn't.
It's the series. This was a drop-off.
It was. I mean, the Lord's won. Most of the reason why England won on the lottery pitch is that England caught. To be fair, England caught very well in that test match. New Zealand dropped very badly. This one...
Yes, but also, 24 of the dismissals out of 40 were LBW and bold. So catches weren't a big feature, but you're right in saying that New Zealand dropped a lot in that test match. Rutchin alone dropped like 18,000 catches in this series. And then England were really clinical. I can only remember one drop from that first test match at Lord's from England.
Yeah. And this one, I think the biggest drop of the test was probably when Duckett was on 8 because it was an absolute and complete dolly and he ended up getting 100. Mm. And that is one of those that could genuinely have saved his career. Because who knows what happens if Duckett goes failure in this test. The Vultures, probably wrongly, would have been circling. And then England are in even more turmoil. So at least from an England point of view, Duckett has cemented his place. I think...
Speaking of Vultures, though, I know Tommy Latham would have held on to his spot regardless because he's the skipper and he's had some success as well as New Zealand's test captain against teams which were, you know, supposedly superior to New Zealand as well at a tricky time away from home. But... Devon Conway also had a bit of a sword hanging above his head. I would like to think so. He had been woefully out of form. He gets 157 of 224. Both of Latham and Conway were very, very brisk. It needs to be noted that they were actually, you know, putting England under a lot of pressure. But you're right. The biggest drops happened in the second innings of the test match. Duckett was on 8 when Henry Nicholls spilled a very easy chance in the slip cordon. Then he was on 52 when he was dropped by Rutchin. I know that one was a bit of a difficult one at a short leg, and maybe that's not a drop, XCO8 or something. And then on 74, when Ben Duckett was on 74, Daryl Mitchell just couldn't react quickly enough in the slips, and that was another drop chance. Now, hometown hero, Ben Duckett saves his spot. He probably is the only maverick remaining in England's team, because I think Harry Brook just doesn't have that jazz about him, right? Now that Stokesy's retired, it's maybe just Duckett. But 7th test ton for Ben Duckett on his home ground. 113 of 99, by the way. It was a 40-ball 50 and an 88-ball ton. So good on him. It's been a long time coming. He got 100 after a year and a really, really poor Ashes series.
Yeah, he was also blameless. One of the only ones in the second innings. He got a really, really good ball from Sears. It just reared up and took the glove, I think.
Yeah. So he was doing all right, right? So, very brisk or whirlwind 36 in the fourth innings.
I thought he wasn't as reckless as the others. You know, Bethel wandering in and not playing a shot to a ball that was going to hit the stumps is...
Yeah. But he had a plan. I'm sorry, I keep interjecting you, but he was just ramping everything, Ben Duckett, in the fourth.
Yeah, I thought there was some method behind his madness. There was none behind Stokes's or Harry Brooke. Like, Harry Brooke's innings was disgusting. And then two of them get run out in the chasing 373, including Joe Root. And that was a story, another story within a story, was New Zealand had two chances for runouts in England's innings. And they were both really difficult. Each one, you know, the second one was even more difficult than the first. The Stanton one was a joke, how good it was. But the Nichols one of Root, Joe Root, by the way, who's on 18-odd, wonderful piece of fielding to get rid of him on the run, swoop, bang. England had four or five run-out chances in this test match, and they got nowhere near hitting the stumps. Two of them, they didn't even pick the ball up when the guy was, you know, 5 yards out of his crease. On such moments, test matches are won and lost. And as it happened, England decided to hand the entire series to New Zealand anyway. So none of this fielding stuff really matters in this one, because England made a tactical decision to lose on purpose. That's what they did, right? Let's not dress it up any other way.
Also,
England lost that test on purpose.
I agree that the fielding isn't what cost England in this test match. But another reason is that New Zealand just dropped more catches, right? There were more missed opportunities. We counted the three Duckett drops in the second innings of the test. In that same innings, Stokesy, he was dropped on one by Devon Conway, if you can remember, right? Jofra Archer was dropped on 13 by Will O'Rourke. And then Ben Sears dropped Gus Atkinson on 22 as well. That's six dropped catches by New Zealand in the second innings of this test match. That's a lot, man. And in the third and fourth innings, I could only that's kind of punny. But I could only remember true drop chances, right? There was one by Harry Brooke. Henry Nichols was on 11 and Brooke was in one of the slips. And that was the only drop of the third innings. And then Ben Stokes in the fourth innings, when he was on one, he smashed the ball back to O'Rourke, hit his finger, nearly parried it to Santner. And that's it. So I think New Zealand outdrop England and still win this test match. But the runouts thing, you're absolutely right about. There were plenty of chances for England to capitalize. And New Zealand just got two runouts and England got zero.
So what happened was, is when New Zealand fought it out, a lot of people were saying the pitch was really, really difficult. It wasn't a really difficult pitch. Trent Bridge is usually a road. What it was a very good test match wicket that was showing signs of deterioration as the test went on. And in very rare, nice English weather as well. So it wasn't cloud cover that people worried about. It wasn't on and off for rain. It was a belter at the start, which got slightly worse as the game wore on, which is what test match pitches are meant to do. And what New Zealand did in their second innings is they realised it wasn't the road and they chucked away 150 runs. They could have easily got 600 in the first innings if they knuckled down. But you don't have to perform at your best to beat England when they're trying to lose on purpose. But the second innings, what New Zealand did is they knuckled down. Mitchell was hit 13 times. In his innings, he was hit 13 times and he didn't do the Stokes thing of mega exaggerating every time the ball hit him and acting as if he was just about to die. He just wore them and carried on, which is what you're meant to do when you play high level sport. You're going to get hurt sometimes. He just got on with it and he made 100. And to make that 100, somebody else who got hit and genuinely hurt, who'd left the field 5 minutes before, came back out to make sure he got his 100. And so Mitchell's 100 was off 240 odd balls, 240 balls. And Ravindra, who somehow turned his series round after dropping catches every time the ball went to him in the field, he dropped it. He batted really well. He faced 150, right? Between those two guys, 390 balls faced. And so they showed England what to do, how you're meant to approach this. Now, England had, when you're 1-1 with New Zealand at home, with one innings left of the series, your options are, if the pitch is getting tougher, try and draw the game or try and win the game. England elected for option three, which was definitely lose the game by all slogging like idiots. But what they could have done is come out and said, look, the best thing for us to do here, look at Headingley, let's get to close today. Or if we get an easy period of bowling, let's put the bad ball away or whatever, as none down or one down, right? Let's close the day out and give a full house tomorrow, who are paying £0 to come and watch Stokes' swan song, something to watch. Instead, no, Stokes will open the batting, slog, 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 out, dead. And then they came today and Gus Atkinson, Bayram, for the second time in this match, faced a load of balls. He faced 150 balls in this test match. No number eight does that anymore.
Crazy.
Doesn't happen. And they showed him and Smith, who I thought played very well, him and Smith batted for how long? Ages, when the game was dead. Hour and a half, no wicket, whatever it was. And they just showed how you could play on this pitch. That 300 and whatever, how many were they chasing? 370. That was
373.
That was not out of reach, and the draw definitely wasn't out of reach, because if your number eight can face 150 balls on that pitch, the rest of you can face the actual bats can bat time and see where they got to. They never for 1 minute gave themselves a chance of winning, and that is a disgrace when you're playing Test match cricket. And now New Zealand have another brilliant away win in a series. They stuffed India 3-0 away, and they've now beaten England. So for the Stokes tenure to end on such a pathetic whimper is really disappointing. And all it does now is it opens up huge questions of what the hell is going to happen between now and when at least some nice, calm, logical, normal cricketers in the Pakistani team are going to visit. And
that made me laugh, because we know that if there's one team England would want to face right now in Test, it's probably Pakistan, right? Because you can expect some nonsense over there as well.
Yeah, it's going to be chaos. But we don't know. England don't know what their team's going to be. Is that the end of Bashir as a Test cricketer? Because he can't really play if Stokes isn't playing, and Stokes, to be fair, captained him very well. At one point, he had more Test wickets than Jofra Archer. I think it probably has to be the end of Bashir, whoever's in charge next time. Who's going to be the captain next? I think it's Brooke, but one bookie in England has just gone up and said there's a 33% chance that Brooke is the captain for the game in Pakistan, which I don't agree with. But the same people think there's an 8% chance that it's going to be Dom Bess. Dom Bess, England captain. Of course he will. Same sort of chance of me being the next England captain as Dom Bess will be. But
I think you have more of a chance.
That's where
we
got to, though, Bayram.
That's how Dom Bess.
No one's got, like, people have lost that much faith in the England cricket team that people whose job it is to evaluate probability at cricket think Dom Bess is 8% to be the next England captain. That's where English cricket has got to. So one thing Stokes hasn't done as captain, and bear in mind, when he took over, I will always stand up for his captaincy, is he's left it in total and utter chaos. As he left the building, he set it on fire. And so there's no, like, continuation that can happen. The only position he's left them in is Key and McCullum have to go. I'd be very surprised. They can't, as I said yesterday, they can't afford to get rid of McCullum, but they can afford to get rid of Key. So Key will probably be shoved out first. McCullum will continue. McCullum was laughing all day long today because he's still getting paid loads of money for this nonsense, coming out and justifying the tactical decision making. How he managed to do that with a straight face, I will never know. How can you sit there and say we had a plan to chase those runs? No, you bloody didn't. You had a plan that Ben Stokes was going to have a party whilst a Test series was on the line. That's what happened.
I mean, he's taken one final trip to the well, but no one else took that trip with him. I mean, calling it a disgrace probably is apt, because this was a disservice to Test cricket. And there's lots more to discuss on this live show as well. But before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Rob Barron and Bayram. So go nowhere. We will be back in exactly 22 seconds.
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things. The phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Rob Barron and Bayram, and we are currently reviewing England's 160-run loss at the hands of New Zealand in the Trent Bridge Test, and also subsequent series loss with a margin of 2-1. Anyway, we were talking about how England will fare in the future. I think we'll come back to this or revisit this towards the end of the show. I actually want to talk a bit about the batting of both teams, because I feel like on this flat deck that we were all expecting at Trent Bridge, by the way. Like, we even discussed this in our previous live show when we were reviewing the Oval Test match. I mean, New Zealand kind of dropped the ball, right? I mean, metaphorically this time. We're not going to the drops again. But if you are 317 for zero, 438 is underwhelming as a first innings total. But England had their task cut out for them. Okay, bat long, you know, enforce a lead, and they do the opposite. Even though they were batting pretty well, they succumbed to 354 in the second innings and conceded a lead of 84 runs. At that point, if New Zealand score 250 runs, then we've got a pretty good game on our hands, and you would expect New Zealand to score 250 runs in that third innings. They declared on 288 for 9, which must have just hurt Stokes and McCullum, because that's kind of their thing, declaring with a wicket remaining. And the target was 373. England folded for 212. Individually, if we look at the batters, right? New Zealand, brilliant. Those two openers up top at the start of this test match, 151 for Tommy Latham and 157 for Conway. Then in that third innings, we saw some brilliant knocks by Rachin Ravindra, who did turn his series around. 76 in his previous innings, last innings of the Oval Test match. And then over here in the third innings, he scored 94 runs. Dazza, Daryl Mitchell, who loved batting in England the last time these two met in England, he scored an unbeaten 100 as well and really put a high price on his wicket. And it's just these four guys, isn't it, realistically? It's not like everyone from New Zealand scored runs. So England, on the other hand, I think Ben Duckett gets his flowers, 113 of 99, and then follows it up with a pretty good-looking 36, ramping in all, so he did well. But when you look at the rest, Harry Brook in this test scores 58 of 80 and 21 of 9. He averages in the 30s when the keeper is up against fast bowling and over 50 when the keeper is behind. So that's definitely something that other teams will be looking at. Pakistan, play Mohammad Abbas and do the exact same thing. We've seen it enough times now. And then Bethel, I mean, he's new, but he scored his highest score ever on English soil in the first innings, or England's first batting innings. He scores 74. It's not a great high score, but a 60 ball 50 was decent. He is out, not offering a shot, LBW, in the fourth innings for zero. So that's not pretty impressive either. And apart from these guys, are we just looking at Jamie Smith then? His 60 in the fourth innings. That's it, right? Or am I missing someone?
Well, Gus Atkinson hung around and you know...
But that's not his job, is it?
Well, if you're the number eight in the test match, you do have to bat. You know, you can't afford to have number eights that can't bat anymore. I was surprised, you know, his strike rate for the match was 27 for the whole match. And this is a guy that scored 100 and who can smack it everywhere in white ball cricket. And he knuckled down and did a good job for his team. So I think when a team is 300 for none in England in a test, you really shouldn't let the other team back into it. That should be, you should slam the door shut and make it so that England can't win the game from that point onwards. This current England, if you rack up a huge first inning score, unless it's Rawalpindi, right? Unless it's mega road for the whole way through, you've kind of done it, because England are going to chase it anyway. Like they tried to chase 600 against India and just fell to bits. I don't think that this was the mega road. I think this, as I said before, I think this was a really, really good test match pitch. This is what we want, a pitch where everybody has a chance to show what they can do on it. And if you're an opening bat, they were slightly lucky. They rode their luck and shots went through slip and Root nearly took a blinder at short cover or wherever he was. And they stuck through it and they got 300 for none. And you think, well, England are dead here. New Zealand messed it up a bit and let England totally back into the test. And it threatened to be, had England not taken it so atrociously unseriously when the Stokes very carefully orchestrated news broke, this could have been a belter, an absolute classic of a test match if England had taken it moderately seriously from that announcement onwards.
Also, I just have a question over here and I don't want to lose it, hence I'm just going to barge in. England, or this team in particular, the Baz Ballers, 370 is the exact score that they love chasing, isn't it? Like, it is right in their wheelhouse. And they used to kind of boast in the past that, I wish it was 450, XYZ. But 373, England, Trent Bridge, England especially are chasing those runs. You'd give them a fair shot. And I was quite surprised. I mean, look, being a Stokes fan, I was very disappointed that he's just made this entire test match about himself. He has not thrown caution at the wind. He has thrown everything. You know, like he has thrown kerosene at the wind and then a Zippo after lighting it onto that kerosene. And he has eliminated the wind. The wind is dead. Rest in peace, wind. Right? I was just really disappointed by those tactics that, okay, now you're coming to opening the batting. Everyone is kind of singing the same song with you telling me that Baz said that that was always the plan can possibly be the plan. He's only done it once before in his career. And, you know, at that point, you should be spurring everyone on that, okay, we've done this exact thing over and over and over again. It's kind of how Baz Ball made its name. Let's go do it one last time. No, I'm going to go open the batting. Emilio Gay, you can figure it out at 5, of course. Like, it's an easier batting number, so it should help you. I'm just, like, you know, really, really disappointed with how England don't take Test cricket seriously enough. I mean, we always mentioned how they are over-indexing or over-obsessing about the Ashes and they don't particularly care about the World Test Championship. But this is still a home series on the line where your supporters are paying 150 quid each day to come and watch you. What is this nonsense? How can you make this Test series, which you could potentially win, all about yourself in your final game? It's like, I suppose it's fitting then.
Yeah, I agree with all that you just said. I think England did have a route to victory on that pitch, and it was shown to them by the New Zealand batsmen, particularly Mitchell. You're going to have to earn your runs and graft for them. And when you are set on that pitch, it wasn't the most difficult pitch to score runs off. It was turning plenty, but they didn't have a very good spin attack. They just had Santner. You know, Ravindra wasn't going to be the guy on that deck. They didn't have Phillips because he's injured. So it wouldn't have, and also they had two fast bowlers that were at least a bit injured. They were running out of people to attack England with by the end of that Test match, and England threw that advantage away by pissing their wickets away. So what they could have done is open with Gay and Duckett was in really good form from the first innings, and Gay has looked good so far in his very short England career, and said, listen, lads, let's try and be 50 for none at the close. Let's get somewhere around there, and we'll have a good old crack in front of a full house. Stokes' last day tomorrow at getting 320 in a day, which we've done before, and wouldn't that be good? And instead, Stokes opens the batting and they're 50 for none after 7 overs. And you think, all right, you fluked away to being 50 for none. You've got 320 to chase now, but the rest of the day, no, England are 4 down by the end of the day, buggering about and playing stupid shots and being really reckless with the opposition laughing at them, standing there and going, what are they doing? We don't have to do anything to win here. They're just lying down. Some people said it was a dirty protest. I just think they're stupid. Well, if they wanted to, they could. And let's say, you know, Gay nicked off early again. Send Jofra up for a Yahoo, if that's what you want to do, or Gus. And just say, we are going to increase the volatility. We're going to try and break the back of this while the ball is hard. They didn't need to do that. That's a rubbish tactic on that deck. What they could have done is said, well, they've only got 2 fit bowlers that are going to cause us any trouble. Let's wait until they're tired and then score some runs. Because Mitchell proved and Ravindra proved with him and Gus Atkinson proved with his 150 balls face in this Test match that you can hang around on that deck. So hang around, give yourself a chance of winning. And England got it wrong tactically, but they got it wrong with mainly the captain's nonsensical over bravado. And maybe it was, you know, those reality TV shows where they have to survive in the jungle or the wilderness or whatever. And the last one, they're really good, aren't they?
Yeah.
The last one left wins the million.
I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here.
That's not what it's called. No? No, it's called like, I don't know. I'll find it. It's no genuine like survival, as in you must not survivor, as in you're in the wilderness. Conditions are awful. You have to survive until the end. And it's basically there's 20 people chucked on an island. They've got to find a way of making fire, making food, making shelter, survive till the end. Yeah. It's really good. Anyway, sometimes when they know they're going to be kicked out or they're leaving the island, they just go to other teams' camps and rip everything down and set fire to it and do all that. I think that's what Stokes did. He just got fed up that he was definitely leaving the island and he decided to set fire to everything. And the surprising thing though, Bayram, is that with the exception of Gay, I think, the rest came along with him. Even Root was playing reverse ramps at the end of yesterday. And they decided, you know, Brooke came out and said, well, I'm going to back this guy. It's quite difficult in professional sport if somebody is going out. You know, it was like the episode of the US Office when Michael Scott is leaving and he decides he's just going to sit at his desk and get absolutely leathered. So he sits at his desk and he's just drinking whiskey and acting the clown. And the rest of the office are like, well, I still have to work here after this. So I'm not going to get drunk as well. I'm going to carry on doing my work because I don't want to lose my job. But the rest of the England team joined in with the whiskey drinking when they should have been at work and started all getting pissed on the field and acting stupid. I don't know what that does. I don't know what that does to their careers moving forward, because sure, like, Brook will probably be the next captain of England, but he played one of the worst ever innings by an Englishman in the most recent test that before he's going to be made captain. We're at a crossroads here that I'm not sure any direction is correct for them to take. I don't know what they're going to do. Key can't be in charge. McCullum can't be in charge. Will they be? Don't know. Brook can't be the captain. Will he be? Probably. Again, I'm asking myself questions that I can't answer. But it's gone full nonsense now. And the other thing that worried me about this test match is that Josh Tong had a really bad test with the ball. He was none for 150 in the match. And as somebody that, you know, after the Ashes, I was kind of banking on as always being one of England's bowlers, that becomes a worry. Mm. Then we have the Archer question of, you know,
yeah,
and we now have the balance of the team question. It's not
the Gary of the team.
It's
bad joke.
I mean, at least he's out of the picture. Don't bring him back into the picture. But what they might do now is they go, well, we need that all-rounder. You know, if you've got shares in Sam Curran, now's probably not the worst time to have them. He might, the new lot, let's say Key's gone and they decide we're going to start again. The two options that I can see is Rahane comes in as your spinner and then you play the extra pacer, but no pacers are banging the door down now to play for England. Or you go, we need another Stokes and it's Sam Curran, because his stock was enormously high not that long ago for England. And for various reasons, he's been injured quite a bit, but he is batting and bowling for Surrey and playing red ball cricket. So I'm not a huge fan. I don't know that much about him, but I'm not a huge fan of Sam Curran, but he fits. He's been captain of an IPL team before. I don't think that's a great answer, but I can't see, can you? Is there any good result here for England? Can't be Root. You know, he can't do it. They now have to, I'll tell you what England really have to do is make damn sure that Joe Root carries on playing for them, because he didn't have a very good series by his standard, averaging 28 or something. And he is now there watching, and I think he is quite good mates with Stokes. He's watching this utter carnage, and he might think, I can't really be arsed with this. You know, if they ask me to be the focal point or the pillar of the rebuild, I just want to bat and have some fun, right? I think Root really enjoyed the lads, lads, lads culture, where he was allowed to just be the one that carried on batting and getting runs. And he did join in and add the scoops and all that when it was right for him to do so. He's got Sachin in his sights, which I think is in the pro column for keeping Joe Root playing for England. And he's genuinely could be the highest run scorer in the history of Test cricket. Maybe that's enough for him. But does he want to restart the whole thing again? Because that's what it needs now for him. They need a full get rid of all of them in the management, because they have spectacularly failed. And once you've, in football, they would say, you've lost the dressing room, right? They haven't just lost the dressing room here. I think there was a game, Man City were fed up at the end of one of the seasons that their manager hadn't been backed. And they lost like 8-0, I think, on the last day of the season. It was like that. It was like, no, we're not happy with the management, so we're going to lose on purpose, and you're going to have to deal with this, ECB. It was the narrative now is that it's the middle finger up to the suits, and everybody gets on board with that, don't they? Nobody likes the suits, so they're going to have to change everything. Is Root going to stick around for another rebuild? Don't know. That's what whoever's in charge need to make damn sure that he sticks around.
I know that Root has Sachin's record in his sights, but is it Root who has that, or is it everyone else? Because to me, I mean, I don't know the guy personally, but he comes across as someone who might one day wake up and his ankle isn't feeling all too well. And he's like, you know what? My drive has ended. I've had enough. And someone else who really wants to play for England should go and replace me. Maybe he's that sort of lad, because a lot of these people are, right? I mean, Kane Williamson did this just like a fortnight ago. So I'm not sure where he's at mentally, or if he actually cares about the record, because he might not. He might just care about winning test matches for England, and personal accolades might not matter to him. We don't know what sort of character Joe Root is in that regard. But England have issues, undoubtedly. They don't have an out-and-out all-rounder, especially pace bowling all-rounder, who can replace Ben Stokes. If Sam Curran is your best bet, then there are issues, right? And Stokesy, by the way, for all the flack that he receives on Combox and everywhere else. He has been England's best bowler pound for pound in these last couple of years, even in this test match. 4 for 70 in 21 overs, followed by 2 for 49 in 25 overs. Crossed that 250 wicket mark as well in test cricket. And sure, his batting has dropped off, and him scoring 30 in his last knock, opening the batting might even be, you know, something that should be celebrated, because he wasn't even managing 30 runs. But my point is that they don't have a fourth bowler anymore. Right? A pace bowling all-rounder. And what is the ethos going to be like here on for England? And my biggest concern, Rob, beyond the balance and tactics and captaincy, is what is the bowling attack like? You just mentioned the Josh Tung. We both thought that he was that X-factor guy, awkward action, pacey. He could really, you know, light it up for England in the test arena. And he's failed in the series after the first test, in which he was pretty good. Jofra is a very unique case. He might just fall apart one day. He does all right in this test match. First outing at Trent Bridge, it was like 2 for 75 in 19.5 overs, so goes for runs, but then comes back in the third innings to take 4 for 53 in 20 overs. And now finally he has as many wickets in test cricket as Shoaib Bashir, which is remarkable, right? But is Jofra long-term, like in terms of options? Not really. Who will take those 20 wickets for England in test cricket for them to win test matches? Tactics and captaincy and batting aside. I think that's the biggest question that we're staring at.
Yeah, well, it's one of the big ones. And it is a time where I'm struggling for the answers. They've left it in such a massive mess that they don't really have anyone to clear it up. Because Robinson was a really big find not that long ago, as in a rediscovery of somebody they used to have who threatened to be good and then for a lot of it was his own reasons, couldn't get him on the park. I was talking to a mate of mine earlier about Flintoff and how it's such a shame that they couldn't get Flintoff fit. They couldn't get him in good shape. And it's the same thing with Robinson. Is somebody at the ECB, their job should be to make sure that these guys who have potential of winning series for England, Robinson could be that good, is to be fit enough, both physically and mentally, to be on the cricket field. And he has not been fit enough physically or mentally for a long period of time, years, a number of years. And then he comes back, wins man of the match, absolutely bosses it, gets three wickets in an over to kill a test match, and then is unselectable for the rest of it. One, because he's unfit, and then the next one is because they're blathering on about something called airspeed, which isn't a thing. It's just a made-up word that people got away with them saying. And they turn up where they don't know what their best attack is, Bayram, and they don't know what they're going to do in the next one. One thing they have lost is Stokes' batting was going like that, but his bowling was completely fine. They've now lost a genuine all-rounder, and they don't really have anyone to replace him. I don't think Sam Curran is the answer. If the answer is Sam Curran, what is the question? But I don't really see the straightforward way that all of this mess can be cleaned up, because it's like they smashed the vase and it didn't go into a few pieces and you can get the super glue out. They've obliterated it and it's smithereens everywhere. And somebody's then gone in and chucked a load of peanut butter and honey on top of it all. And then Stokes is pissed on it. And they've now got to try and put that back together. It's a very difficult task. What it needs is they've tried, and so many things in the world go like this, is they've tried the let's be chilled out and let the lads, you know, let's trust them to behave like men. They've totally messed it up, all of them. And what they should have done is had at least one grown up in the room that just said, listen, Baz, listen, Keezy, get off the golf course for 5 minutes and let's work out how we're going to win this Ashes series, right? And no one did that. They all said, let's have another round. Let's a round in both senses. Let's have another round of golf, another round of lagers and Jaeger bombs, and to hell with the job that we're extremely highly paid to do. So
let's go to Noosa.
So exactly. So now they need somebody, and probably multiple people, who have brains in their heads, right? Because they tried the zero brains method and it absolutely didn't work. So let's try the method with some brains and some common sense and see where we get with that.
You spoke of the vase, right? And then Stokes pissing on the vase, which was now smithereens. Well, we'll have to check the alcohol content of Stokes's piss, because those smithereens might have melted. So we might be heading towards a point of no return. But I know that the English media and global media will over-obsess over who should be England's next test captain. We've established that it can't be Root. He was fine as an interim captain for just that one test match, and he proved that he is not the best choice, right, in that one test match at the Oval. Now, maybe Duckett, perhaps, because he's, like I said earlier, the only maverick sort of personality that I actually feel England has now in that test team. Can't be Brook. Cannot be any of the bowlers. And then, of course, the leadership question is secondary, because, you know, who bowls for them? Who's going to take the 20 wickets? And I'll throw some names at you, right? Before we go on break, you pick a bowling attack for me, which is supposed to play all three tests versus Pakistan. You cannot change it, just for the sake of this exercise. All right, here we go. Gus Atkinson, Ollie Robinson, Jofra Archer, Brydon Carse, the Overton brothers, Sam Curran, Shoaib Bashir, Josh Tung, Toby Roland Jones.
Wow.
I'm really pushing myself over here, man. It's got to be someone else. Matthew Fisher, Matt Potts. Yeah, I think I'm done.
James Anderson. James Anderson comes straight back for me. Anderson as captain for the summer. Let's calm everything down. Let's get everything in place. That's my shout. That's what should happen, is James Atkinson should come back in and be captain of England, right? That is about the same likelihood as Don Best doing it. Not 8% bookies. Come on. It always amuses me when bookies price things up where they don't have other people or other bookies to copy off, and they just come up with the most nonsensical craziness. Anyway, I don't know is the answer. I think from the names that you said,
Gus Atkinson.
It's probably Gus. It's probably Tong. It's probably, if you're playing three tests, Jofra. And if he can't do three tests, let him go. Let him loose and earn millions franchise cricket, and let us watch him bowling four brilliant overs, 10 times in a couple of months, right? Let's do that. So Jofra, Gus, Tong. We definitely need a spinner. I thought Fisher did enough in his go to warrant a chance as being your fourth seamer. He also scored 50 with the bat, let's not forget. And so I think Fisher did enough, because what he did was bowl dry test match line and length over and over again. That is something that England haven't had for ages, somebody that can do that. I don't want to see the Josh Hull type experiments, and let's get somebody in because they're really tall or because they bowl with their left hand. Let's get people that can
Ollie that, Stone that can do it. Is another one.
Maybe Robinson gets the go, and they say, look, enough about airspeed, enough about you not being fit. You prove that you can play for England. You're playing all three tests against Pakistan. We'll review the position at the end of the series. It's not a long sample to give somebody. It's perfectly reasonable to see, can you play three test matches in a row and perform? Because we're playing the English summer at home. There's going to be loads of people there. They're paying loads of money. See what you can do over three test matches. We're not going to drop you. We're not going to talk about airspeed. We're not going to make another word up that doesn't make any sense. We're going to let you do it. Last game you played for us, you were brilliant. You're a man of the match. You batted really well. You bowled awesome. You got three wickets in and over. Let's see that Ollie Robinson for three test matches against Pakistan. That's what I would do. But as I keep saying, it's all a great big fat I don't know. And the question marks today was, does Emilio Gay fit into whoever's coming in's plans next time? I think he's done enough to keep his place. He's also been booted to number six in test match number three. You've got to let these guys have a chance. I think he's shown enough to be given a go. Duckett's always been fine, but he's back. Is Bethel a test match number three? Don't know. Played a really good innings at the end of the Ashes, and he played all right in the first innings here. Brook is obviously precociously talented, and that's what makes him so frustrating. Should he be captain again? Absolutely, definitely not. But he probably will be, because he's been vice captain for ages. And what's the point of having a vice captain? One thing that I think is quite telling is that Stokes came out today and said, I am 100% behind the appointment of Harry Brook as England captain. Well, that should tell them not to do it, Mayram. If Stokes is saying you should do it, you shouldn't do it.
If Stokes is the leader of the frat, right? If he's president, frat boy president, then clearly Harry Brook has gone through the initiation phase where he's punched a lad in a bar. Like, he's done everything he needs to do to get that job then. He's part of the frat. But I don't know. I don't have any answers as to who should lead England and what their composition should look like. I suppose, like, maybe a starting point would be to get rid of the management. Maybe Keezy has to go, perhaps, because, like you said, sacking Baz would be a bit ridiculous, and, you know, jokes on the ECB then. But I think that they've got a couple of months, or a little less than 2 months, to figure this out up until Pakistan visit. Until then, we'll definitely see lots of headlines. I think, like, there will be drama, as we always can expect from English cricket. And like I said earlier, they're lucky that they're facing Pakistan, because any other team would have taken advantage of this. Pakistan might just hand England the series. Anyway, we shall be taking another short break, after which we have to come back to discuss some Super Chats. And I want to talk a bit about New Zealand's bowlers as well. So see you in 16 seconds. Go nowhere, and we shall be back.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Bear Ram and Rob Barron, and we've already reviewed most of the Trent Bridge test, but there are some things left. We spoke about how, you know, going forward, we're not sure who will be England's, or who will consist of, or which bowlers will consist in England's bowling attack. And that's a big question mark, because they all have issues. New Zealand, their paces, just, it's like a factory, right? Like a supply chain, where there are new guys who will continue to replace the older guys, and they'll never have any issues. And we saw something similar in this series. Like, player of the series is Nathan Smith, by the way. And Nathan Smith is someone who people weren't even rating, including myself, at the start of the series. He takes 4 for 91 and 23 overs in this test match in his first bowling innings, and then doubles up with 2 for 64. So, and sorry, I've got that wrong. 2 for 64 came first, and then 4 for 91 happened later. But 16 wickets in the series, has a bit of swing and can bowl wobble seams, so there's some stuff to like about him. He's no mug with the bat either. Will O'Rourke was good throughout the series, but his only 3-for came in this test match, when he took 3 for 53 in the second out of 4 innings, and then he got injured. Zach Foulkes was not even playing this test match. Concussion sub comes in, and he's the best bowler for New Zealand. 3 for 35 in 15.2 overs, and 3 for 52 in 11.1 overs. And then Matt Henry was injured. We know he'll be around. Kyle Jameson, he will also play as many tests that his body allows him to. I think that it's a very stark contrast when you look at both of these teams, because on one hand, England have issues with both seamers and spinners. And New Zealand are like, okay, we've got our fast bowlers, and then Glenn Phillips and Santner can just help us out whenever we feel like we need their help. Very different places to be.
Yeah. Smith, just going back to the start of your point there, played really, really well. His bowling is, he's much more of a bowling all-rounder than he is a batting all-rounder. We saw a glimpse of his batting. What was his highest score? 38 or something in the series?
Something like that,
Very, very good series, and probably a worthy winner of the player of the series. But like always with New Zealand, that was a series where loads of them chipped in. Like, Henry won a test match. Jameson bowled a spell of fire. Mitchell got his 100. Conway got his 100. You know, Latham and Ravindra and Nichols came in for an all-time great and did his thing as well. And I've mentioned this before, but Blundell's keeping in this test series was a joy, and it exposed another flaw that England have got, in that they can't do the same tactic that New Zealand did. Not because they don't have the bowlers that can do it, because Robinson can kind of do the wobble ball thing, can't he? But if you don't have a keeper that can do it, and as much as I like Jamie Smith, he's no Blundell behind the stumps by any stretch of the imagination. He dropped an utter dolly in this test, and when he was asked to stand up, there was another joke bit of cricket where Jofra said, "Can I have Jamie Smith up to the stumps?" And they looked at Stokes, and Stokes said, "Do whatever the hell you want. I don't care," basically. And so he did come up to the stumps, but he looked very much like somebody like me. If I was asked to go up to the stumps, I would stand there, but I'd have no idea what to do with my feet or my hands. And Smith looked like, well, I'm facing Jofra Archer here. What the hell am I meant to do? And Blundell standing there being awesome and keeping Brooke and Root very firmly in their box. And it was a box that they weren't happy to be in and didn't kick on and get scores. So New Zealand.
And I mean, Alex Carey did the same thing not too long ago in the Ashes. Blundell is like Alex Carey pro max when it comes to keeping up to the stumps to fast bowlers. You're right. And Pakistan should be looking at this as well, because they've got some bowlers who could use that exact same tactic. But England, I just feel like every other series, ever since the slide of Bazball has started, they end up with more questions than answers. We've barely had any answers. And this is a very relevant super chat by Abhilash over here, who says, is there a bigger brain fart of a cricket team other than Pakistan than this current English team? Now a bigger brain fart is about to take over as captain. God save English cricket. So yeah, I mean, it's just wrong decision after wrong decision. And they make a mockery of themselves in the press conferences and any sort of media talk. They double down on the lunacy. And at the start, it wasn't as big of an issue because we were like, okay, this is dressing room talk, which they're just coming and telling everyone. But they're winning, so no biggie. And they're exciting and they're entertaining. But all of that is gone. Do they even retain the ethos of Bazball, or is that officially over as well?
It looked like that died. So somebody made the point today, I forget who, that we may well be going into an Ashes series with a captain who is less intelligent than the average Australian. And that is a position that no team should ever find themselves in, right? That is the full embarrassment if you're dafter than the average. And the unfortunate thing for Brooke is it looks like his career, he fully intends to come across as somebody with no brain cells. And that is a difficult watch, because when you see somebody with that level of talent, you know, the six that he hit off O'Rourke in the last test, off a good ball on that was hit in the top of off, there are a handful of people in the history of the game that are able to do that. But for him to constantly score 58, which is basically what he's doing at the moment.
How does he do it, man? It's shit score in 58. But I think Harry Brooke is the Cole Palmer of cricket. That's how I like to describe
him. Yeah, I don't know what he is. But what I do know is he's amazingly talented. And what the job of the ECB is to harness the talent and get it to the top level of performance they can get it to. That is not an easy job with the egos and the varying degrees of brain cell that the English cricketer has got. To their, if you could say it's to their credit, they have got rid of some moderately smart people in the England setup and have gone down the line of let's get, you know, some dummies in. You know, the likes of Duckett and Bethell aren't going to be entering Mastermind anytime soon. But to have, you know, Stokes, I think, had a good cricket brain and a bad person brain, which showed very much at the end of his tenure. It started off like a train, his tenure, but they're left now. God save English cricket. Yeah, like it's in such an utter and complete mess that it's going to take some clarity of vision. And it's someone like Owen Morgan needs to be around to help with that. And like a proper cricket brain who understands gambling, right? Which McCullum, as much as I loved McCullum the player, this guy that's running the England cricket team is a really bad gambler. You know, rumours abound that the reason why he needs the £1 million a year is because he's a bad gambler in real life. Doesn't understand when you're meant to declare, all that kind of stuff. And when to, you know, he actually came out and said that was the right tactics to do what England did. That was a tactic that guaranteed defeat. There aren't many tactics that guarantee defeat. I'm all for let's do something ridiculous when you can't possibly win. Like when the game's done, let's all just, you know, let's try and chase 380 by hitting every ball for six in 40 overs. But it wasn't that deck and it wasn't that time. It was one all with half a, you know, test match to play, and they just buggered it up. So it must be clarity of thought now. The nonsense was really fun at the start, and then it just became a joke that they were playing on themselves. And this is the third time I've mentioned it today. When the other team is laughing at you during the game and audibly saying on the stump mics, what are they doing? You have now become beyond a parody of yourselves. You are a laughing stock, and that's what England are at the moment. And for a while, you know, go back and look, Bear. I mean, you have been discussing this since before Christmas. They were getting away with it in the public eye by playing ridiculous tactics, ridiculous attitude to themselves, the media, and their supporters. The joke has got unfunny spectacularly, and people have fed up now. Like anyone that went to that test match, they were loving the fact that it was Stokes' last day, because people in this, you know, this social media age love saying I was there, and the moment where he got the wicket was really fun. But he got a guy out who can't really bat, who played a bad shot, and it didn't have any impact on the test match. They then buggered about for an hour and a half trying to get the tail out. They have become a parody of themselves. The joke has died. English cricket is now, after Stokes' brilliant early captaincy and changing of the game of test cricket and all that, which was amazing, it's now gone so far the other way that England are in a much worse place than when he took over initially. And how on earth has that happened? Mm. That was nearly impossible 15 tests into his career, into his captaincy. And the last, you know, Ashes onwards have been the full joke. England cricket is dead again. Who is going to come in and resurrect it?
Yeah, I mean, look, Abhilash, I think the question should be, which is the bigger brain fart of a cricket team? Because Pakistan has done some really fun things as well in this time. So England and Pakistan are really up against each other, and now they will be in test cricket as well. So, yeah, I mean, maybe we go back to some normalcy, or is that too much to expect? Because Jack over here asked the same question in a super chat. How delusional is it to think that England will take the World Test Championship seriously now? Also, if New Zealand had held their catches in the first test, would Stokes have retired? And I love this because that suggests that he's saying that had New Zealand won the first test match at Lord's, they wouldn't have gone out partying at the naughtiest nightclub in Chelsea, and then all that drama wouldn't have ensued, and then maybe none of this would have happened.
Yeah, had New see, everything comes down to catching, by the way. We know this. But had New Zealand held their catches, you're right, Bayram. England wouldn't have gone out on the piss celebrating. They may have gone out on the piss commiserating. But maybe, you know, it's the old butterfly effect. Maybe the butterfly's wing would have flapped in a different direction. The wind would have blown and someone else would have died rather than English cricket. It's all hypotheticals. How delusional is it to think that England will take the World Test Championship seriously now, right? Very good question. I don't think it's delusional because I think it's a really easy fix for the next people that come in charge to go, this is our manifesto. We care about the World Test Championship. How about that one? Radical, right, in English cricket. Mm. Because not only did they deliberately lose, and that's where I am with that test match, England deliberately lost. Not only did they do that, they also, in the test where they were getting stuff with one of the worst England cricket teams that they could have picked, possibly, you know, I just looked at the numbers, like Potts is absolutely bossing it this season. Anyway, so they threw that test match away, but they lost the exact same amount of points for getting stuffed with a rubbish team, for not bowling the overs very fast, you know, for conning people out of their 150 quids who were paying to watch it. So if the next lot come in and go, I was there for the World Test Championship final last year. Was it last year? The South Africa-Australia one. It was brilliant. Yep. It was a great occasion. Loads of people loved it. Ada Markram played awesome. Australia lost, which is always amazing to go to. It was a fantastic occasion. And England are basically saying, even though we get the advantage of home conditions in the World Test Championship final, we don't care. We're not going to play in it. We can't be bothered. We, you know, if you're making rules, we are going to flout them and never mind, you know, never mind having another test. It's such an easy one for the next person or people to come in and go, we are going to take it seriously. We will no longer... It is a ridiculous rule that you can lose as many points for losing a test match for bowling your overs not very fast, right? It's ridiculous, particularly when you're getting mega punished for a test match that finishes in 3 days anyway, right? It doesn't matter. But it is a rule, Bayram. Right. And you can say that you don't like the offside rule in football in the World Cup if you want to. But if you have somebody that's standing on the goal line for the whole game, you will never win a match ever. And you have to play by the rules of whatever the competition. If you don't like the rules, you can say so publicly, try and get them changed, get your top brass to wander into the ICC halls and say, listen, lads, we provide 25% of world cricket's money. Stop this stupid rule. We don't like it. Do all that behind the scenes. But if you're playing in a competition, play by the rules, try and win it. England don't with the biggest thing in test matches, right? The mace, the World Test Championship. So to answer that question, it shouldn't be delusional. I think it's such an easy one to start with for the next management.
You know what you start with? I mean, if I was there, I would just talk to the new management and tell them that in the last two test series, one of which was an away Ashes series, the only two test matches that England won were on chaos lottery pitches. Let's fix that. Let's learn how to win test matches on decent strips once again. And maybe that can be a starting point. I don't know. I don't play the game professionally, but that is an observation, right? They've only managed those wins on surfaces where any anyone could have really won it. Anyway, BRRRRRTTTTTT202 with the final super chat of the day. When did teams realize top of off was the key to, or was the way to go? And why didn't anyone tell England that? It's like heads, top of off, tails, short and wide. They've been obsessed with the bouncer, I can tell you that. And short and wide is like England's slogan for their away Ashes.
Yeah, it's also how they pick their opener sometimes. I don't get any of the tactical stuff. I think they just, like I said, became a parody of themselves and really, really confused themselves tactically. And that's why it must be ripped apart and start again. Like, top of off has been the thing in Test match cricket for at least our lifetimes and probably before. And there was a thing where the plans got leaked of several Test teams. One of them was England, one was Australia, I think. And basically, the plans for like 8 batsmen out of 10 was bowl top of off, because that's what you're meant to do, isn't it? Like, good bats, bad bats, medium bats don't like the ball that is arrowing at the top of off, because it means you can't play the shots that you most want to play. England don't understand any of that. They don't understand.
They did understand it at Lord's. That's the one thing they did.
Lord's was aim at the stumps because it was chaos, carnage, pitch. Some were shooting along the floor and some were jumping up. You should never get that pitch again, you know, in English cricket. If they do the right thing, you know, they're now saying the World Test Championship final, which, spoiler alert, England won't be in, won't be at Lord's because they can't trust the surface. That's how bad it's got there. And I guarantee you that will be sorted out, and may the next time that England play at Lord's, it will be a much better pitch than that one. But they should take note from this one, Baron. That Trent Bridge pitch wasn't the super mega road that, you know, Alex Hales used to feast on in the white ball all the time, and the it was a pitch that got slowly worse and brought every bowling type into the game as the game went on. Class. So more of that, please.
So BRRRRTTTT is saying, it's a genuine question, Behram. When did teams actually realize that top of off is the way to go? I would like to think that once reverse swing is gone and McGrath is literally targeting top of off, that is when it becomes mainstream. And then with the wobble ball, that's really the length, right? But you're right. Maybe you do need Jared for a proper historical account over here. And you've sent another super chat as well, mate. I can see that. He asks, does Stokes' retirement mean Bash is done too? How do they fit him in? I envy this life though, or his life though. World Tours gets to bat and others will bowl for him. I think Bash was a Crickviz pick, right? They picked him on release point because they were over-obsessing on release points before the India series when they travelled to India. What happens to Bash now? Who's to say? Maybe he doesn't even feature for Somerset.
Yeah, I think there's a very real chance that that's it for him and he never plays a test match again. I think if the McCullum key axis of nonsense stays there, I think that would be very good for Bashir. I think the retirement of Stokes has negatively impacted Bashir's chances more than any other cricketer, I would say, of having a good career. Like, he'll be the one that feels this the most, I think. Maybe even more so than Stokes, to be honest, because Stokes could easily be back playing for England. You know, how easy is it to see that Stokes has managed to just lay enough petrol down that Key and McCullum are burnt, and then the new lot sort it out a bit, get players that Stokes likes, gets an atmosphere that Stokes likes, and Root, you know, says, come on, mate, fancy the Ashes. How possible is that? Like, it's really possible. I think Bashir might be done because
Bethel, he's another one of those guys, right? He's a classic Baz ball pick, as was Sonny Baker. Oh, shit, I forgot him when I was asking you about the bowlers.
Yeah, Baker should have been nowhere near the England team in any format based on his numbers and his skills at this moment of his career. He might be a great lad, but I know people that are great lads and they're not going to play cricket for England. It's a bit like Jordan Henderson playing in the World Cup for England, right? I don't care how good a lad he is. He shouldn't be playing in that midfield. But how do they fit him in? Why is the question, how do they fit him in? Because they don't need to fit him in, right? You don't stop fitting in bad players. I'm sorry, like, Bashir is not a great test match spinner. I actually think, considering where he was when he started his England career, he's done really well and I like him. There's a lot to like about Bashir. And I think rather than if he doesn't play again, it'd be like, what a shame, he's so unlucky, he could have blah, blah, blah if they'd have kept with him. He's played 20 test matches. It's if you'd have said to Bashir, 3 years ago or whenever, you know, before he'd been thought of, before he came up on Rob Key's graph that said he had a high release point. I don't know what his airspeed was at the time, but his high release point, if he'd have said you're going to play 20 test matches for England, he would have snapped your hand off. And he has done brilliantly well to play 20 test matches for England. And also, really importantly, he hasn't disgraced himself by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's done really well considering his talent level. It's, again, if England asked me to play, I would play. He's 22 years old. In test match cricket, I'm looking now, he's averaging about 40. He's got 71 wickets in 21 games. That'll do. Thanks very much. I got 71 wickets for England. He's got 100 runs somehow in those 21 tests. Like, he's done fine, but he will not be somebody that whoever comes in next will build the team around, will he?
Well, I mean, they'll build the team around Dom Best, that much we know. So let's wait for that day then. It's been a pleasure, Rob Barron. Five Ashes tests and then these three. We've grown some grey hair and probably lost some, you know, brain cells whilst reviewing England's test cricket. But it's been a fun ride and hopefully we'll do something similar for Pakistan or that series. And that'll be it for today, folks. Thank you for your chats and your super chats and all of the interactions. They mean a lot. And of course, don't forget to follow Combox everywhere. Like, share and subscribe. And keep fastening your seatbelts every day because we're going to give you content on the daily on this channel. So yeah, take care, have a fun one, and let's see what happens to English cricket here on because we've got no clue. Cheers, guys. Bye-bye. Adios.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.